Good morning, everybody. I don't really have a plan for the total course. What I want to accomplish is that we should become more acquainted with the Sefer HaSfarim, the Book of Books, Tanakh, with the people of the book. And unfortunately, while we may be called the people of the book, our acquaintanceship with it is very, very limited. I'm going to start from the beginning, and what I hope to do is take a number of chapters in Sefer Yehoshua, a number in Sefer Shoftim, and we'll just keep going merrily along until we have finally made some kind of a dent in Tanakh. Of course, the very best idea would be, and I would recommend it, that you should take time out during the course of the week and just read chapters of Tanakh, so that as we say do three or four chapters in Sefer Yehoshua, during that period of time you will have been able to go through all of Sefer Yehoshua. Let's say that I will try and guide you along, but you know, you have to have a Tanakh and be ready to open it up. What I hope to do is encourage you along on the way and give you insights into Tanakh. That having been said, we'll begin. Let's read the first few psukim of Sefer Yehoshua. Vayehi acharei mot Moshe, Eved Hashem, and it came to pass after the death of Moshe, the servant of God. Vayomer Hashem, and God said, El Yehoshua bin Nun, to Yehoshua the son of Nun, Mishareit Moshe, the servant of Moshe, Leimor, so say. Here is the first communication from God directly to Yehoshua. It would seem that this is taking place somewhere around the seventh day of the month of Nisan in the year 2488 from creation. Jews had gone out of Egypt in the year 2448. The 40 years in the desert have ended. Jews are now encamped along the banks of the River Jordan with flags unfurled, ready for the thrust into Eretz Israel. And now the torch of leadership has already been passed to Yehoshua. God is now going to speak to Yehoshua for the first time. So, it came to pass after the death of Moshe, the servant of God, God said to Yehoshua bin Nun, Mishareit Moshe, the servant of Moshe, so say. Moshe avdi mate, my servant Moshe is dead. V'ata now, kum avor et hayadein, arise and cross the Jordan, hazeh, this river Jordan, ato v'chol ha'am hazeh, you and all of this people, el ha'oretz, to the land, asher anochi notein lehem l'vnei Yisrael, that I give to the children of Israel. Every place where your feet, the soles of your feet will tread, I have given it unto you, kasher dibarti el Moshe, as I said to Moshe. And he gives him the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, may Hamidbar v'Halevanon hazer, going from the south, the desert, through the Lebanon, ad Hamahar Hagadol Nahar Prot, until the big river, the river Prot, kol Eretz Achitim, included in it is the land of the Chitim, v'ad Hayam Hagadol Nivo Hashemesh Yihyeh Givulchem, to the west, your boundary is going to be the Yam HaKadol, the Mediterranean. And so we have the south. The south is the desert. The north is Nahar Prat, the Euphrates. To the east, obviously, they're standing now already on the east bank of the Jordan. It will extend to the Mediterranean. Lo yit yatzei vish lefanecha, no man shall stand before you kol yimei chayecha, all the days of your life. Yehoshua is being given quite a guarantee and a promise. No man will be able to stand up against him kol yimei chayecha, all the days of your life. Kasher hayiti Moshe, as I was with Moshe, ehaye imach, I will be with you. Lo artecha, I will not permit you to be weakened, velo ezveka, and I will not forsake you. Chazak de'ematz, be strong and be courageous, ki atot tamchilet ha'am azeh et ha'aretz, asher nishbati la'avotam, latet lehem, because you are the one who is going to cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give to them. You are going to be the one who's going to give the land to them as inheritance. Rak, only but, remember, chazak ve'ematz, be strong and be courageous, ma'od, lishmar, even more strength and even greater courage is now required, lishmar la'asot kechol ha'torah, to keep and to do all of this Torah, asher tzivcha Moshe avdi, that my servant Moshe commanded you. Lishmor usually means to guard and protect, not to do any of the negative commandments, not to transgress. Lishmor usually is lo ta'aseh, the negative commandments, and la'asot is to do the positive commandments. In a sense, we can say that the two terms lishmor and la'asot mean sur meira, ta'aseh tov. The lishmor is the sur meira, stay away from evil. The la'asot is asay tov. Al tosur mimenu yamin usmol, do not turn from Torah to the right or to the left, leman taskil, in order that you should succeed, bechol asher telech, wherever you go. Lo yomush sefer ha-Torah hazeh mipicho, this sefer Torah shall not be removed from your mouth, v'hagita bo yomom v'layla, you should think and study Torah day and night, leman tishmor la'asot kichol ha-katuv bo, so that you should keep and do all that is written in Torah, ki oz tazliach et derachecha, because then you will succeed in the path that you journey, v'oz taskil, and then you will also an intellectual, an emotional, and a religious form of success. Halot Siviticha, behold, I have commanded you, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and be courageous. Al ta'arotz, do not permit yourself to be broken. Va'al teichat, and don't feel that you are being kept down. Don't feel lowly. Don't permit yourself to be broken in the face of what may seem to be insurmountable obstacles. Why? Because God, your God, is with you, bechol asher telech, wherever you go. Bechol asher telech. All right, first nine psukim. This is God's first, his first words to Yeshua. Now we have to analyze it. Yes? Yes.
Now, Yehoshua wrote
Sefer
Yehoshua. Who wrote
Sefer
Yehoshua? Yehoshua himself?
Yes. Yes. All right. Let's begin with a question that was asked of me some, or I would say, 35 years ago. First time I taught Yehoshua, a student in grade 9 asked a question. It's the kind of question that a Rebbe usually, that kind of narishikasha. What do you ask me narishikashas? On second thought, it's not such a silly question. And I believe that that's going to give us the beginnings of an insight into Sefer Yehoshua. And of course, what I want to discuss today is the personality of Yehoshua. Who is Yehoshua? What do we know about Yehoshua? The question that young man asked me a long time ago, the opening three words of God's first communication to Yehoshua. Three words. The second pasuk, it says, Moshe Avdi Meit. My servant Moshe is dead. This is now 30 days after the passing of Moshe. He had been mourned already for 30 days. It's all over. Now, is
is God coming to tell him information that he doesn't know? Is there something? What do you mean, Moshe? I know that Moshe died. Why does God begin by telling Yehoshua, Moshe Avdi, my servant Moshe is dead? We usually assume that God doesn't simply engage in conversation with great men just to pass the time of day and tell them that which is unnecessary.
He knows it, Yehoshua knows it. Pasuk should have begun. God spoke unto Yehoshua, so saying, Kum avor et hayarden, cross the Jordan, you and all of this people, the great moment has arrived. Israel is going to enter the promised land.
It's not a silly question. Because as we will study Yehoshua, we're going to find that for the period of the 40 years in the desert, and maybe even before that, the personality of Yehoshua was inextricably intertwined with that of Moshe.
All that Yehoshua was came from Moshe.
And we're going to see at extremely important junctures in history,
the two who operate together, Moshe as the servant of God and Yehoshua as his misharet, these two people are at every important moment in history of the 40 years the Jews are on the desert, these two are together.
The Gemara even makes the comment, Pnei Moshe kipnei chama, the face of Moshe was like the face of the sun, Pnei Yehoshua, the face of Yehoshua was the face of the moon. What does that mean? What are they saying? They're saying that all that Yehoshua was, he was a reflection of the greatness of Moshe. Moshe was the sun. Where does the moon, where does the moon get its brightness from? Its light is a reflection of that which comes from the sun, which means that whatever Yehoshua is, he owes completely to Moshe. And what happened over here was a relationship that developed between Moshe and Yehoshua that was so strong and that was so powerful. In a sense, Yehoshua became the alter ego of Moshe.
He's more than that. He is the great faithful student. He is the one. Moshe kibel Torah mi Sinai. Moshe received Torah from Sinai umesoro lo Yehoshua, and he transmitted Torah to Yehoshua. Yehoshua, as we will see, is not only going to be the great general, Yehoshua is also going to be the one who will be the great commander-in-chief of the Jewish people, the great military leader, the great political leader, the statesman of Klal Yisrael. And all of this comes from Moshe.
So I say that the death of Moshe, the passing of Moshe, had a profound impact on Yehoshua. In a sense, what we see taking place is, maybe in an exaggerated form, the sense of loss that Yehoshua feels. What is one of the first reactions to the death of a loved one? The first reaction is denial. It didn't really happen. I can't believe it. At any minute now, somebody is going to pinch me and tell me like it's not really so. There is a period of absolute denial. One cannot come to grips with the loss. The process of healing can only begin the moment that the mourner comes face to face with the reality that the loved one is dead and nothing is going to bring that loved one back, and now life must be lived without him. As long as denial exists, there is no place for comfort, or for that matter, re-entering life. What happens to the mourner at the moment of loss? There is not only the denial, but there's also a removal from the entire flow of life. Impossible to just go about one's normal tasks and enter into relationships with people as before. One has suffered a terrible tragedy. The terrible tragedy is all encompassing and all embracing. Yehoshua, who better than any person on the face of this earth knew the greatness of Moshe, could not imagine life, a Klal Yisrael, a Jewish people, entering into Eretz Yisrael without Moshe, there's nothing. Do you know what Yehoshua needs? Yehoshua, more than anybody else, needs to be shaken out of that first stage, the stage of denial. He may still be feeling that, it didn't really happen. Moshe is going to return. But there's one thing that Yehoshua learned in all of the years that he was with Moshe. He learned that ultimate truth in this world is the Word of God. The Word of God is absolutely truth. Therefore, the first three words that God says to Yehoshua are, Yehoshua, Moshe Avdi Meit. My servant Moshe is dead. Period. Final. As far as Yehoshua is concerned, having heard that from God, this is the expression of ultimate reality. The denial is over. Va'apa now, once the denial is passed, now you can go on to accomplish great things. Kum, arise. Get up. Now it's time to get up. The mourning is over. You cannot live in the past. This is it. The mantle of leadership now is yours. Kum avoret hayadim, arise and cross the Jordan. Yes. Continuation. So therefore I say, these first three words that God says to Yehoshua are extremely important. Moshe Avdi Meit. This is the fact. And now, Kum avoret hayadim, arise and cross the Jordan. We're going to get back to the relationship yet between Moshe and Yehoshua, because that's going to give us a picture of who Yehoshua was and what it is that Yehoshua is going to accomplish during the rest of his lifetime, and what is going to be described in Sefer Yehoshua. Three times God tells him, Chazak ve'amatz, be strong and be courageous. There are two questions that we have to deal with. Number one, what indeed is the meaning of Chazak ve'amatz, be strong and be courageous? What's the difference between being strong and being courageous? And second, why is he told three times Chazak ve'amatz? The Malbim says the difference between Chazak and Amatz is the following. In order for one to take the first step in a great undertaking, that means to think of something important, to arrive at the conclusion, be ready to do it, take the first step, requires a great deal of strength. But we know what we are. We are human. And while we begin this great undertaking with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, there is always the possibility that with the passage of time, there are going to be difficulties, there will be obstacles, all sorts of things are going to happen, and it's going to take great courage to see the undertaking through to its successful conclusion. Let's give a number of examples. Children go off to school. First day of school. Notebooks are clean and neat, and everything is covered beautifully. school begins and they're going to write the date and the name at the top, and there is a solemn resolve, even if it's not said clearly, going to take notes and everything's going to be neat, page by page, notebook by notebook. By the end of the first week already, there's doodling on page 5. Page 6 is Tzichisn, and Tzichlisn, and you know, you always will see the notebook begins so clean and so neat, but the end is not, this isn't the way it was planned to be. Every 7 years, people begin to learn the Daf Yomi. I would say that more people have learned Masechta Brachas every 7 years. And you know, most people can survive through Brachas. Someplace in middle of Shabbos, the attrition begins to set in. By Erevin, it's just time out until something easier comes along. To make the decision to start, that takes strength. To see it through to its successful conclusion, that takes courage. Because one no longer has the great enthusiasm that comes at the moment of beginning something new. You don't have that enthusiasm. What you have is the nitty-gritty problems, the obstacles that have to be removed, the problems that have to be resolved. Listen, we all know, we undertake all sorts of things in life, And we don't always see it through to a successful conclusion. Yahushua is being told, or being blessed by God, Chazak, be strong, v'emat, and be courageous to see it through to its successful conclusion. Which, just as an aside, brings to mind, I don't know if you people notice the ads in Hebrew. There's such talent. Ads, you know, Peter Somet, one that just hit me as being very beautiful. Have you seen signs that say Chazak Va'ameitz? You didn't see that? Oh, yeah, it's so beautiful. It's an ad to adopt a family of Olim. The word Ameitz means to adopt. So a play on the words of Chazak, Ve'ematz, be strong, and be courageous, Chazak, be strong, Ve'ametz, and adopt the family. Just, they have beautiful plays on words, yes. There certainly is a relationship. Because Imutz really means to give strength to, and give courage to somebody else. There's no question about it. Absolutely. Why is Yahushua told 3 times Chazak Ve'ematz? And incidentally, we're going to find out that earlier in Torah, back in Torah, he was also told 2 times Chazak Ve'ematz. But let's see, what are the 3 times Chazak Ve'ematz here? Yahushua has 3 tasks. There are 3 major undertakings that he's going to have to accomplish during the course of the rest of his lifetime. He is going to have to conquer the land. He's going to be the great commander-in-chief. He is also going to be the one to transmit Torah to the Jewish people. He's the great commander-in-chief. He is the great Rebbe. And he is also going to have the task of causing the people to inherit the land. He's going to have to divide the land amongst them and get each tribe settled in its place. Any one of these 3 is a great undertaking in and of itself. And one man, Yahushua, is going to have to be the one to do them all. For each one, he needs strength and he needs courage. And if you'll take a look in the Psukim, you will see, Pasuk 6 says, Chazak v'amatz, ki atot tanchil et ha'am hazeh et ha'aretz. Be strong and courageous, because you are the one who's going to cause them to inherit the land. You're going to divide the land amongst them. Pasuk 7 says, Rak chazak v'amatz, be strong and be very courageous, because you're the one who's going to teach them Torah, lishmor la'asot kechol ha'torah, asher tzivcha Moshe avdi, lo yomush sefer haTorah hazeh mipicha, v'hagita b'yom v'layla, study it day and night. The third time is in Pasuk 9, halo tzivitcha, I have commanded you, chazak v'ematz, be strong and be courageous, al ta'arotz v'al teichan, do not be broken in the course of battle. I would say, if one would ask, and it only occurs to me now, the order in which he is told chazak ve'ematz is first, because you're going to cause the people to inherit the land; second, teach them Torah; three, conquer the land. I believe God's order is he begins by telling him what is the ultimate and the final objective of your lifetime. A Klal Yisrael settled in Eretz Yisrael. Each one, ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'inato. Each one in peace. That's the ultimate goal. There are two things that are going to be necessary in order to achieve that goal. One is the transmission of Torah, and the second is the conquest of the land. So that the order of the of what God says to Yoshua is very clear. And it really means in these three, Chazak ve'ematz, really sum up the entire Sefer of Yoshua. This is precisely what's going to happen. We're going to see Yoshua as the conqueror. We're going to see Yoshua as the great teacher who takes the place of Moshe. And we're going to see Yoshua finally causing Israel to inherit the land. Yes? Yes. Fine point. The point is very well taken. She said, only by Torah in Pasuk 7 does it say, Rak chazak ve'ematz ma'od. More strength and more courage is going to be needed in the transmission of Torah and in its acceptance by the Jewish people. Everything depends on that. And I believe that the reason may very well be conquering the land, as we find our rabbis tell us, that the conquest of the land took 7 years. There were sheva shekivshu, 7 years of conquest, the sheva of shechilku, and 7 years during which he divided the land amongst all of the tribes of Israel. There's a time limit. In other words, there are things that have an end. There's a beginning and an end. Torah is endless. And therefore, Rak Chazak Ve'ematz Ma'ot. One has to be very strong and very courageous in order to turn one's life into a life of Torah. Every word, and I appreciate the question, because every word really is weighed and balanced with talking about the words of God.
You also have a guarantee of success in conquering the land.
Yes, Yehoshua is given a very unusual guarantee, but you know what? We're going to see that there are going to be moments of great crisis, even with the promise and even with the guarantee, and we find this by all of the great of the Jewish people. Despite the promises and guarantees that they received, there was always the fear, Shemo Yigrom Hachet, maybe sin is going to cause that I will be unworthy. Yes. Yes. To Avraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, to Moshe, and in a similar sense we're going to see to Yeshua, God says to each one of them in turn, Al Tira. Do not be afraid. Each one is told in a vision or an appearance of God, Al Tira, don't be afraid. Avram is told, Al Tira, Avram, do not be afraid. Schorcho, Harbe, Miyot, you have a great deal of reward. Don't be worried. Each one, Yaakov on his way down to Egypt, Al Tira, Midadom, Itzchaim, don't be afraid of going down to Egypt because I will be with you. In Tanakh, we find often in Yeshayahu, Al Tira, Avdi Yaakov, my servant Yaakov. Each one of them, despite the fact that they have guarantees, they never looked at guarantees as though they're blank checks. You know? Alone guarantees, yes. Guaranteed checks. they always, in their humility, looked at the guarantee as something that is really dependent on the way in which they are going to conduct themselves. And there are going to be serious crises in the life of Yehoshua. That means in terms of his leadership of Klal Yisrael. Their first battle, the battle against against Yericho, they are going to win, well, say hands down. They march around the city seven times and the walls of Jericho come tumbling down. Their second battle here, an invincible people, their second battle, they go against the city of Ai, and they are defeated in battle. We're going to read later how Yehoshua responds to that first defeat. Defeat is terrible. In order to better understand Sefer Yehoshua, what we have to do now is learn more about Yehoshua himself. What do we know about Yehoshua? And what I plan on doing is taking you as quickly as possible on a journey through Torah. Where is the first time that Yehoshua appears in Torah? Now, the Meraglim is in Sefer Bamidbar in Parashat Shlach. Where is the first place that Yehoshua appears? There he appears as one of the Meraglim. He's not amongst the Nisim. Huh? All right. We're going to begin. Huh? He is at Mount Sinai and his name appears there, but he appears even before that. Good, good, good. The sneak attack. In Pashat, the end of Pashat B'Shalach, the sneak attack of Amalek. I'll refresh your memories. At the beginning of Pashat B'Shalach, Jews find themselves along the banks of the Red Sea. It's at night. The dark, ominous sea lies before them. On the other side, they hear the hoofbeats of 600 chariots coming toward them. Israel is literally caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, until miraculously God takes them through the Red Sea. The sea splits, Jews cross the Red Sea. That's the first part of Parashat B'Shalach. At the end of Parashat B'Shalach, you know what we have? Vayavo Amalek. Amalek came, Vayilochen in Yisrael b'Refidim, and he waged war with Israel in Refidim. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, and Moshe said to Yehoshua, Bechar lanu anoshim, choose men unto us. Choose men, v'tzei hilochem ba'amalek, and go out and wage war with Amalek. Machor tomorrow, anochi nitzav al rosh hagiva, I will be standing on the top of the hill. U'matei elokim b'yadi, and the staff of God is going to be in my hand. Vayas Yehoshua kasher omar lo Moshe, and Yehoshua did that which Moshe told him. So first of all, no introduction is given to us about Yehoshua. All we hear is Moshe immediately giving the job to Yehoshua. It means, therefore, that there must have been a relationship between Moshe and Yehoshua before. And the fact is that what kind of a job is he giving Yehoshua here? Here we see Yehoshua in one of his roles. His role as a military commander. Does he have much experience? He hasn't had any experience. Jews haven't waged any wars. They don't have a whole bunch of alufim b'miluim. There are no commanders in chief. Moshe obviously sees that Yehoshua has the potential to go out there and do battle with Amalek. What we have over here is not only Yehoshua appearing as commander-in-chief. We find over here Yehoshua appearing as commander-in-chief in the same way in which he is going to command the Jewish forces in the conquest of Eretz Israel. Because take a look at what's happening over here. We usually lose sight of the fact that the Jews are threatened by an attack at the beginning of Parashat B'Shalach and at the end of Parashat B'Shalach. But the responses are different. Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, are coming toward them. Jews find themselves helpless. They can't do a thing. They begin to cry out to God. Do we hear Moshe there saying, okay, fellas, let's set up our defenses across the beach. This is going to be Dunkirk, or it's going to be Normandy. No. They seem to fall apart in the face of Mitzrayim. On the other hand, the moment that there's an attack by Amalek, a sneak attack, I mean, December 7th, 2448, sneak attack. The response is a manly response, so to speak. I'm trying to think of some better way. A courageous response. We don't find them falling apart. We don't find Jews crying out helplessly to God. But you know what we find? Huh? Very, very cool-headed. Absolutely. Moshe immediately gives instructions. He says to Yeshua, B'chalon o'anoshim, choose men, say lachim b'amalek, and go out and wage war with Amalek. Tomorrow I'm going to be at the top of the ridge. And we know what he does there. It says that Moshe raises his hands and prays heavenward. And as Moshe's hands remain extended heavenward, Yahushua is able to be victorious below. If Moshe's hands begin to go down, the war goes against Yahushua. What we find over here is the first model of what a war waged by the Jewish people is. It's always a partnership. It's a partnership between Jews who are out there in the field of battle and a God above who makes the decisions of what's going to take place on the battlefield. That's going to be the difference between Sefer Yehoshua and what we read about in Torah. Is during the course of Sefer Yehoshua, we're going to see man doing battle and God the one who decides. In a sense, there is a tremendous transition that takes place in Sefer Yehoshua. 40 years Jews had been going through the desert. What kind of an existence did they have in the desert? Hanhagan Nisid. It was all a miraculous kind of existence. Nobody had to do anything. In the morning, it was mon in the morning. One didn't, as Torah describes it, shoes lasted for 40 years. It's then a pair of shoes. May even have been a pair of Egyptian shoes. Lasted for 40 years. Their garments did not wear out. And they didn't have to do a thing for 40 years. Everything was provided for them on a silver platter by God. What's taking place at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua is the great transition from a miraculous kind of existence to one that is a normal kind of existence. During the course of that transition, there are going to be moments of great miracles. For example, yes, the walls of Jericho coming tumbling down. There is going to be a battle that Yehoshua is going to wage, where he's going to make that great statement, Shemesh begivon dom v'yoreach be'emek Ayalon. As they are pursuing the kings of Canaan, he commands the sun over Givon to stand still, v'yoreach, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon. It's really, if I can't help it, when I drive along the Kvish Echad, you know, not the one that they're fighting about, Kvish number Echad. So Givon is not far from Telstone, near Kiryat Yarim. About another 20, 30 kilometers down the road or less, you come to Emek Ayalon. Emek Ayalon is the Shalavim area. So the moon remained over Shalavim and the sun over Telstone. This was miraculous. But the rest of the wars that were waged by Yehoshua were the way wars were going to be waged by Jews throughout history, which was Man had to go out onto the field of battle, but it is be'ezrat Hashem, be'siyata d'shmaya, all of these great things, God and man acting together. Yes? Very good. So that we have Yahushua, appearing before us here as the commander in chief, but there's more to it. It says, "Vayas Yahushua." Yahushua did that which Moshe said to him, "Lehilachem b'Amalek, to wage war with Amalek." Moshe Aaron the Chur. I'm reading from the end of Parashat B'Shalach. Moshe Aaron and Chur went up to the top of the hill. This is in Shmot Perek 17, Pasuk 10. And incidentally, I would suggest that you should have a little Tanakh with you. We're going to have to be moving. We're going to have to let our fingers do the walking through Tanakh in order that we should really understand what's happening. There's a general rule, and I'm going to prove it in this first chapter of Yehoshua. I'm going to prove it, I believe, without any shadow of a doubt, but that won't come this week. I hope it'll come next week. An extremely important rule in Tanakh. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, Divrei Torah aniyim b'mekomam v'ashirim b'makom acher. The words of Torah are poor in their own place, but wealthy in another place. What that means is, it's a very beautiful way of saying that when one is learning a single parasha or a single pasuk in Tanakh, what one has to bring to bear upon it is a knowledge of all of Tanakh. Because at any one point, it may seem as though it's poor and pithy, there isn't much that's being said. Ah, but if you take a look at that one parasha or that one pasuk in a context of all of Torah, oh, then you begin to understand what's taking place over there. We're going to see first in this case, as we go through Yahushua, where Yahushua appears in Torah, we're going to have to go through a few parashiyot. It will lighten up for us, will make bright, like a comet, the personality of a Yahushua. And watch, Yahushua does that which Moshe says. There isn't a word of hesitation. Not a word of hesitation. And if you listen to the pasuk carefully, the pasuk is saying that Yahushua did what Moshe said to him, because Moshe said, that's why he does it. We already hear of the intimate relationship that exists between them. Yahushua could have said, Rebbe, me, I mean, the best I've been able to do is learn a Sepasik Chumash with you, or a Blat Gemara. You taught me a Shver Rambam. What do I know about waging war? As far as Yahushua is concerned, if his Rebbe tells him, go out and wage war, you know what his Rebbe is telling him? You can wage war. You can do it. And therefore he listens without hesitation. And it comes to pass,
maybe that was an influence on them.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but remember, I one of the ground rules that we establish over here is I try and let the pasuk speak to me rather than my reading into the pasuk. I mean, I understand. Yes, it's true that Amalek attacked the rear. Where the weak or the ill or the infirm or those who are falling behind. Yeah, none of us are. But anyway, Yahushua, because his Rebbe tells him go, he feels that he can do it. Alright, so Moshe holds his hands up. As long as his hands are up, Israel is victorious. Then he sits down on a stone. Aaron and Hur both hold him from both sides. Pasuk 13 says, "Vayachalosh Yehoshua et Amalek v'et Amo l'fi Chorev." Yehoshua weakened Amalek and his people l'fi Chorev by the sword. By the sword means that he functioned as a fighter on the field of battle. He didn't throw
Rambams at them or Psukim. He went down and he fought the way a battle is supposed to be fought. Very interesting machloket amongst the Tanoim when Moshe says to Yoshua, Bechar lanu anoshim, choose men unto us. What kind of men should he choose? Fascinating machlokas. Rabbi Yoshua says, Bechar lanu anoshim, choose men, gibodim, strong fellows. Rabbi Eliezer says, Bechar lanu, choose unto us yirei chet, those who fear sin. Now, it's according to Rabbi Eliezer, from people, observant people, check their tzitzis, and then send them off to battle. According to Rabbi Yehoshua, check their muscles, and then send them off to battle. It's a very fascinating machloket. You know, I always wonder whether, Rabbi Yehoshua had some kind of a very special feeling toward Yehoshua, but the truth is one can prove that this is in general the approach of Rabbi Yehoshua. What may seem to you need people in. Rabbi Eliezer, in a sense, Rabbi Eliezer sees things on a more spiritual level, and therefore he says, Yirei Chet, those who fear sin. Which always, when I see this machloket, it always brings to mind the other famous machloket between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, or two other differences of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua that we once discussed. And I'll just say it briefly. There is a machloket. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Ein Yisrael nigolin, Israel will not be redeemed unless they do tshuva. Without tshuva, there is no redemption." Rabbi Yehoshua says, "What do you mean, Rabbi Eliezer? If they don't do tshuva, there won't be redemption. Who knows how long this can go on into history? Therefore, Rabbi Yehoshua says, even if they don't do tshuva, God is going to redeem them. And in the process of that redemption, Jews are going to have to fight for their independence. But what does Rabbi Yehoshua hold? As long as they're giborim, they're not from, that's going to be God's job. He's going to have to send the Mashiach to make them from. But there can be redemption even if the only thing we have going for us is that we're strong enough to go out there and fight. According to Rabbi Eliezer, need more. Rabbi Eliezer says that only if there is tshuva will there be geula, will there be redemption, because you need people who are yirei chet, God fearing, to go out there and wage war. Yes. So we have both. We have gibodim and we have yirei chet. And incidentally, that therefore brings me to Rashi here in Parashat Bishalach. You know what Rashi does? Rashi says, choose Gibodim, V'yirei Chet, those who are strong, and those who are God-fearing. Shetei Zechutan Misayatan, the Zechut that they have should help them. And you know, it only now occurs to me, when Rashi says, choose Gibodim, strong ones, and Yirei Chet, and God-fearing, does that mean both in the same person or two kinds of people? No, it can't mean both in the same person. Because if it's both in the same person, then Rashi is expressing the opinion of only one. He's expressing the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. If he wants to compromise and say Rabbi Eliezer is right and Rabbi Yehoshua is right, then you know what? He's going to make an army of Gibodim and Yirei Chet. In other words, I think I'm right. I don't know. So I say, very, very good. If I'm not mistaken, what you said is if he meant one in the same person, he would have said Gibodim Yirei Chet. Gibodim, who are God-fearing. If it says Gibodim V'Yirei Chet, it means those who are strong and those who are Yirei Chet. So you can have Hezda boys and I don't know, we'll use those who are not yet Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. There's one final pasuk I want to deal with here, and that is the very last pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe." God said to Moshe, "Ksov zod zikaron b'sefer. Write this as a to be remembered in a book. V'sim ba'ozne Yahushua, and put it into the ears of Yahushua. Ki mocho emched zecher Amalek mitachat hashamayim. I am going to destroy Amalek from beneath the very heavens." Isn't this unusual? It is to be written in a book. What do you mean that it's written in a book? Written in a book means that later in Parashat Devarim, in Sefer Devarim, it's going to say, Timche et Zecher Amalek. Zochor, remember, Asher also the Amalek, remember what Amalek did for you on the road. Timche, destroy Zecher Amalek. But it's not enough. God says to Moshe, write it in a Sefer and put it in the ears of Yahushua. What does it mean, put it in the ears of Yahushua? I believe one of the Mepharshim says that what's being established here is an extremely important principle. There is Torah Shebichtav and there is Torah Shebaalpeh. There is the written law and there is the oral law. Who therefore is going to be the one to transmit the written and the oral law? Here, I saw one of the Mepharshim who says, here a hint is being given to Moshe that the one who is going to succeed him is Yahushua. That means at the very first moment that Yahushua appears in Torah, already an indication of what is going to happen 40 years later. What do you mean put it in the ears of Yahushua? If it's Torah Shabbat Peh, tell it to all of Israel. But there's going to be one man who's going to be charged with the transmission of Torah. Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's going to be Yahushua. Do you know what that means? It means even more. That at the very first time that Yahushua appears before us, do you know how he appears? In both of his roles. He appears in the role of commander-in-chief, and he appears in the role of the one who's going to transmit Torah to the Jewish people. And now, as we will journey through Torah, we're going to see Yahushua in one or another of these roles. Yahushua, the fact is, Yahushua is a fascinating, fascinating personality. And sometimes I feel that he is, he's sort of lost in the brilliance of Moshe. And you know, maybe people don't learn Yahushua that much. Yahushua, most unusual character in Tanakh. Incidentally, I saw one of the Farshim who says Yahushua is the only character who appears in all of Tanakh that not a negative word is said about him. The only one. In Chazal, our rabbis do make some comments about Yahushua. But remember, the beauty of Torah is that Torah will say where something has to be said about a shortcoming of a leader, even Moshe. How many times does God say, "Yan lo hamantem bi, because you do not show absolute faith in me to sanctify me because before all of Israel, therefore you will not cross into Eretz Israel. You sin before me." And when we talk about sin, it's obviously on a level of a relationship between a God and Moshe. Every one of the there are moments at which God, in a sense, says something, or Torah says something about most of the great of Tanakh. We have to go through Moshe, so Moshe and Aaron, even Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There are problems, and Torah does not whitewash or cover up. The only one about whom not a negative word is said in all of Torah or in Sefer Yeshua is about Yahushua, a very, very unusual person. Alright, so we see him now in two of his roles. Where does he appear next? The next time he appears is at the end of Parashat Mishpatim. Here we'll be able to go a little more quickly through it. toward the end of Parashat Mishpatim, it says that Moshe is on his way to the mountain. Perek Chav Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayakam Moshe v'Yehoshua Mishorito. Moshe and Yehoshua Mishorito. And incidentally, that is the description of Yehoshua at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. What's the first pasuk? Vayihi acharei mot Moshe eved Hashem. God spoke to Yehoshua bin Nun mishoret Moshe lemor. In other words, to be the mishoret Moshe is most probably the greatest title that one can ever achieve. To be the mishoret of Moshe. And here he is called that Vayomim, Vayoka Moshe v'Yoshua Mishorto, Vayal Moshe El Har HaElokim. Moshe goes up to the mountain. Isn't it interesting? It says that Moshe and Yoshua got up. And Moshe goes up to the mountain. It doesn't say what happens to Yoshua. What did Yoshua? This is before Torah is given. Moshe is going to go up to the mountain now to receive Torah. Now, it should have said, Moshe and Yeshua got up. Moshe went up to the mountain. I don't know. Yeshua took a bus back to town. I don't know. What did Yeshua do? Where did he go to? What happened with Yeshua? An unusual Rashi. This is one of the unusual Rashis in Tanakh. Rashi at the end of Parashat Mishpatim says, Lo yadati mativo shel Yehoshua kan. I don't know. What is the nature of this statement that Yehoshua is mentioned here? Va'omer ani, Rashi, the great Rashi, was able to say a number of times, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what it's saying here. Va'omer ani, Rashi says, I say, Shehoya ha-Talmid milave l'rav ad makom hagbalat tchumei ha-har. You know what the Torah wants to tell us? That the student went with the Rebbe as far as he could go. You know, Moshe walks with Yehoshua, the Mesharet. Now there's going to be a point where it says, Atzor, stop. Shchina lefanecha, the divine presence is before you, and the only one who can go further is Moshe. But Yehoshua is going to go with his Rebbe until the point where he cannot go any further. In a sense, every moment with the Rebbe is cherished by Yehoshua. So therefore, Rashi says, Omer ani, the Talmud was accompanied the Rav ad makom hagbalat chumei ha-har, until the place where the mountain was set apart. She'ena rishoy leilech misham v'hola. He's not permitted to go any further, so he's going to stop. Umisham, from there, from that point on, vayal Moshe. Moshe went up alone, El Haru Elokim, the Yehoshua obviously notat ahalo. He pitched his tent, v'nit agei sham kol men yom, and he remained there outside the camp at the foothills of Mount Sinai all 40 days. Shekein Matzinu, because that's what we're going to find when Moshe is going to come down from the mountain after God tells him that Jews have made a golden calf. Do you know what it says? Vayered. That Moshe came down and Yehoshua was there. Lomatnu, and Moshe asks Yehoshua, what's the sound that's coming from the camp? Lomatnu, so we learned that Yehoshua wasn't there. Yehoshua wasn't there. Where was Yehoshua? He had accompanied his Rebbe till the foothills of Mount Sinai, and there they separated. His Rebbe went up and he pitched his tent down there and remained. There's something else that Rashi is telling us here in those last few words. You know what Rashi is telling us? When Jews made the Egel, there were two Jews in the world who were not in the camp. Moshe and Yehoshua. Which means something else. Which means that of all of the Jews in the world, there's only one who was in no way involved in the two great sins of the 40 years in the desert.
the sin of the Egel and the sin of the Meraglim. The only one is Yoshua.
Yoshua is the one who came back and gave a good report. Yoshua is the one who said, let's go, we can conquer them. And Yoshua is the only one who remains completely and totally untainted with the sin of the Egel Azov,
because he wasn't there, he wasn't the camp. That's what the Torah wants to point out. No, because there was he had no official position. His only position in life is as described over here. He's Mishoreit Moshe. He is not the servant of the people. He's Mishoreit Moshe. He remains there waiting for his Rebbe to come back. And for 40 years, do you know where Yoshua remains? Yoshua remains, for all intents and purposes, for 40 years in the Beis Medrash of Moshe. We're going to see him emerge at a few moments in history, and we're going to have... what I'm beginning to build up is, why is he chosen above all others to be the one who carries the torch after Moshe? So first of all, we found out that he can fight on the field of battle. We find out also that to him is to be transmitted Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. We've also found out that he's the only one who remains absolutely unsoiled and untainted with the two great sins of the 40 years in the desert. There's more. Yes. Yes.
I'll tell you. Sandy's asking very good.
In Parashat Shlach, in Sefer Bamidbar, Moshe is sending the 12 tourists off to spy out the land of Canaan. So it says over there that one of the 12 was Lemate Ephraim, for the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea bin Nun. And then afterwards it says, by Yikra, Moshe called Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. Which seems to leave us with the impression that it is only later that Moshe changes the name of Hoshea to Yehoshua. And here, we only now read the first time that his name appears, he is Yehoshua. Now, we may have some time yet for this, not today, but we're going to go through all of the Yehoshuas. We're going to find out that he's called Yehoshua throughout. One of the last times, someplace in Parashat Hazinu again, he's called Hoshea. He's been called Yehoshua throughout. The Ramban says that the fact is that Moshe had already changed his name early on in their relationship. Similar to the idea that when Yosef becomes the second in command of Egypt, so Paro gave him a new name, Tzafnat Paneach. This was accepted practice. Now, by virtue of the fact that you have been raised to a certain position, and there's a certain relationship that exists between us, the leader gave a name or a title. In a sense, Hoshea was still Hoshea, but his title was Yehoshua.
Yehoshua.
We're going to discuss that as well, but it seems, according to Ramban, that he had always been called, in other words, from the very beginning of their relationship, Moshe had called him Yehoshua. So then we're going to have to answer two questions. One, why does Torah first tell us that the name was changed? Where? By the Meraglim? So some say, of course, that Moshe in advance saw that there is a possibility of being influenced by the Meraglim, and he prayed for Yehoshua never to fall under their influence. And therefore Torah writes it there, but he had changed his name much earlier. And we're also going to find at the end of the Sefer, at the end of Torah, he's called Hoshea. In a sense, as Moshe passes, Yehoshua is Yehoshua, while Moshe is Moshe. As Moshe passes from the scene, you know what? That name that was given to him by the one who in a sense adopted him, amazed him, that in a sense passes with the death of Moshe. Would it be too far-fetched in saying that God now renames him as Yehoshua? Because from being the second in command to Moshe, he now becomes the second in command to God. We'll make one more point before we close for the day. And this is also going to be a significant reason why Yahushua is going to be the one who now carries the torch of leadership. The Gemara says that the children of Esav are going to fall into the hands of the children of Rachel. Who are Rachel's two children? Yosef and Binyamin. Yosef's two children became tribes in Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh. Who are the ones that wage war with Amalek? The first one to wage war with Amalek is Yahushua. Yahushua is from the family of Ephraim. He is from Rachel. The second who's to wage war with Amalek is Shaul, the first king of Israel, who is from the tribe of Binyamin. Who is the next one to wage war with Amalek? Ish Yehudi Hoya B'Shushan Abiro Shmo Mordechai Ben Yoir Ben Shimi Ben Kish Ish Yemini. It is the children of Rachel, the Gemara says, who are going to vanquish Amalek Esav. Pasuk at the end of Ovadia that says, V'hoya bet Esav lekash ubet Yosef lehava. The house of Esav is going to be straw, the house of Yosef is going to be a flame of fire, and it's going to consume and destroy Esav. There is something about Rachel and her children that make Rachel and her children the ones who are the nemesis or the antidote to Esav. In a sense, first of all, because when there's the great confrontation, Yaakov and his family come before Esav, so it says that Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah with their children behind them bow down before Esav, and then Yosef v'Rachel acharonim. Yosef defied Esav. He didn't want Esav to be able to see his mother. Yosef walked in front of his mother, Rachel, as they were presented before Esav. There is a sense of defiance over here. I think it's more than that also. I think there's something else that's involved in the children of Rachel. There's another way in which Rachel is different than all of the others. She's the only one who gives birth to a Sabra. The only one of the Imahot who gives birth to a Sabra. And we're going to talk next week in our Parashat HaShavua class, we're going to talk about the Korach, the power of Eretz Yisrael. Binyamin, and those who are going to emerge from him, who are Shaul and Mordechai, have a special power. Yosef develops this power because he defies Esau, but Binyamin is mighty and powerful, and the children of Rachel are the ones who are going to destroy and vanquish Amalek. In a sense, we're also going to see it's for that reason that Moshe must remain behind and Yahushua crosses into Eretz Yisrael at the head of the people, because Meshech Chochma, Rav Meir Simcha says this at one point, there was a sense of confidence that Jews had developed in Yahushua, that if there's anybody who can destroy the enemies of Israel, Yahushua is the one who can do it, because Yahushua was the first one who waged war for them. He was the first one who was able to do it. One other point at this point, and with that we'll close. The only Ben who's always called Bin is Yahushua Bin Nun. Why is he called Bin Nun? Why can't he be called Yahushua Bin Nun? You know, sometimes we don't even think about it because we've become so used to this expression of Yahushua Bin Nun. The Ramban gives two reasons. Number one, it may seem that this was the name that the people of the yeshiva of Moshe, I imagine
Moshe's yeshiva was, it was Toras Moshe. This is not the pirsomet for any particular yeshiva, but it must have been a yeshiva like that. The best student in the yeshiva was Yehoshua, so they called him, instead of Ben Nun, they called him Bin Nun, in order to leave the impression of Binon, the one who has exceptional Bina, exceptional understanding. He is the Bin Nun, the Bin Nun. There is another pshat, the Ramban says, the word Nun means leadership. It's brought in Tehillim, Lifnei Shemesh Yinon Shemo. Yinon means to exert force and leadership. He's Bin Nun, so that we have the Yanon, in a sense, the idea of leadership. It means, therefore, that the two reasons why he's called Bin Nun, one represents his leadership as a man of Torah, and the other his leadership as a man of war. These are the two that become fused in Yahushua, and therefore he is the leader who's going to bring Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. To be continued.